This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And no, this isn't Tony Perkins today. It's Everett Piper, Dr. Everett Piper of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, where I serve as president. And I'm honored again today to sit in for Tony Perkins. He's on vacation, I guess, today. I don't know if he's golfing or mowing the lawn or fishing, but he deserves a day off. And again, you'll have to endure me as your host for the next hour. Again, I serve as a college president. I've been on your program before. Some of you may or may not remember that I'm the guy that wrote that this is not a daycare piece. I'm the guy that constantly says that ideas matter, ideas have consequences, that good ideas bear good fruit in culture and in church and in community and in our government and in our neighborhoods, and that bad ideas bear the opposite. As your grandma said, garbage in and garbage out. So let's set the stage for today's broadcast, today's program, by just citing a couple ideas that I'd like to share with you today. One of the topics I think we'll discuss today is it acceptable for Oral Roberts University to dismiss a student for homosexual behavior, for a violation of their honor code, and choosing to engage in behavior that is contrary to what this university stands for and contrary to what she signed on the bottom line as being complicit in. We'll talk about that. I'd like to talk about Title IX. Title IX is the 1972 law that established a woman's right to equal access to the athletic field and to other programs on the university campus. For example, if a college or university has a soccer program for men, it should likewise have a soccer program for women, and it should be funded in a similar fashion, and that women should get the same facilities and they should get the same scholarshiping as the men do. Title IX. I'd like to talk about a mandate that's been issued by the Department of Education with regard to Title IX on Oklahoma Wesleyan and other institutions. Another idea we'll discuss today as we go through the various different segments is Judge Garland. Should Judge Garland get a hearing or not? Should the Republicans agree to give Judge Garland a hearing as a nominee to the Supreme Court, or should they refuse? And should he be nominated if indeed the Republicans do give him a hearing? So that's your program for today, and those are some of the things we're going to discuss. Let's go back to Title IX. I said to you that Title IX is the 1972 law that established a woman's right to equal access on the campus to various different programs, more specifically to the athletic field. Now, I'm going to read you something that I wrote a few days ago, because Title IX has been reinterpreted. You see, the federal government, through the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights, has issued a Dear Colleague letter where they're now requiring all institutions to adhere to and comply with a redefinition of what Title IX means. Now they're demanding that all institutions, in order for them to be Title IX compliant, must provide for transgender accommodations. In other words, if a young man decides that he is a young woman, he can avail himself of the woman's locker room, the woman's shower, the woman's bathroom, the woman's dormitory, and the woman's athletic field. In other words, Title IX, under the auspices of giving women equal rights, now requires us to give a biological male equal access or preferential access to a woman's sport if indeed that biological male claims to be a female. I'm going to read you something. On December 21st, 2015, the Human Rights Campaign, one of the nation's largest LGBTQ activist groups, issued a letter to the United States Department of Education calling for greater transparency from Christian colleges and universities. The reason given for this demand includes what the HRC calls a disturbing trend of religious schools citing religious reasons for seeking certain exemptions to Title IX. The Title IX, is the federal law enacted in 1972 primarily for the purposes of giving women equal access to the intercollegiate intercollegiate sports. Since its passage, athletic programs and facilities have been made available to women in direct proportion to men at our college and university campuses. As the result, women have enjoyed nearly a 500% increase in athletic participation nationwide over the past 40 years. In 2014, however, the Department of Education issued new guidelines requiring the accommodation of transgender students. With this ruling, it became law that, among other outcomes, any biological male who feels that he is a female can avail himself of women's athletic teams, locker rooms, showers, and/or restrooms, and live in a women's dorm if he wishes. Oklahoma Wesleyan University and several other Christian colleges therefore sought relief under the existing religious exemption provided in the Title IX law. Thus, the demand from the Human Rights Campaign that the DOE now require Christian schools to publish comprehensive information about the scope of the exemption they requested and received. My response in short... I gladly comply, and here's my report. Yes, Oklahoma Wesleyan University requested an exemption. We recognize the ontological and biological dignity of a female. We believe in science, and we believe in facts. Being a female is an objective reality, and there is little more empirically obvious than one's sex. At OKWU, we refuse to participate in the misogynistic insult of women by ignoring such self-evident truths. Yes, Oklahoma Wesleyan believes women should be granted the dignity of having equal access to athletics and other programs, as well as their own facilities. Women attending this university will not only have their own basketball and soccer teams, but they likewise will have their own restrooms, their own showers, and their own dormitories. Yes, Oklahoma Wesleyan reserves the right to discriminate between those who are male and those who are female. To do otherwise would seem to contradict the very premise of Title IX, which calls upon us to differentiate, to discriminate between females and between male students, and to thereby give women the same access to programs as men. If we didn't discriminate in such a way, how in the world would it be possible for us to comply with Title IX? So there's your report. How much more transparent would you like me to be? At Oklahoma Wesleyan University, we believe that sexual identity is a scientific fact, and we refuse to degrade men and women by suggesting otherwise. Yes, we were granted an exemption. We are pro-woman, and we're proud of it. That's my letter, that's my op-ed in response to the DOE and to the Office of Civil Rights and to the Human Rights Campaign for demanding that we seek an exemption and for the Human Rights Campaign's effort to out us, if you will, and expose the fact that those institutions that are seeking this exemption should be embarrassed by somehow having this information put out publicly on the Department of Education's website. Now, just this week, here's the end of the story. The Department of Education decided that indeed it would comply with the Human Rights Campaign's mandate and demand that this be published. In other words, the DOE on its website now cites those institutions that sought an exemption to the transgender accommodation and then received it, which was their right to receive under the 1972 law, which has always had a religious exemption clause therein. So today, you can go to the Department of Education's website and you can see the institutions that sought out this exemption. Frankly, I am proud that Oklahoma Wesleyan is on that list. I am proud that we have taken a stand for the dignity and the identity of the female. I am proud that we are pro-science and pro-woman. I am proud that we look at this obligation that we have under Title IX since 1972 to give women their own sports, to give women their equal access to scholarships, to give women equal facilities, which would include not only the court and the field, but a locker room and a shower and a restroom. And we celebrate the fact that as human beings, we are thinking and rational, and that we therefore understand that the synonyms for the word discrimination would be decision and differentiation and distinguish, and that if you can't look at a male and a female and tell the difference, i.e. discriminate between one and the other, differentiate between one and the other, and make a decision to comply with Title IX because, in fact, the female is a fact and not a fancy or a fabrication, and she deserves the integrity and the dignity and the definition therein, that Title IX is a meaningless bunch of postmodern mush. So yes, Oklahoma Wesleyan University has taken a stand for defending the woman. Oklahoma Wesleyan University has taken a stand for standing with science rather than the deconstruction of something as obvious as your sex and your gender. Let me ask you this question. What was the first thing that was ever pronounced upon you at birth? Probably the first words that were ever pronounced on every single person listening to me on this radio show right now, they were words pronounced upon you by a scientist, a medical doctor, somebody who is probably one of the most consummate scientists that you will ever engage with throughout the course of your life. He understands the science of anatomy, the science of physiology, the science of biology, the science of medicine. And this scientist, when you were born, looked at you and said what? It's a boy. Or it's a girl. Now, why did he say that? Was it his opinion? Or was it a fabrication? Was it just his wishful thinking? Or did he look at the empirical evidence that was obvious to all and make a decision that this is either a male or a female child? And did he pronounce a scientific verdict accordingly? This is what an education should be about, looking for the facts and pursuing them to their logical end, debating truth, pursuing it, and not constructing it by virtue of your own wishes and your own desires. Frankly, what you wish and what you desire at times is trumped by the facts of the science therein. There is no gene for transgenderism. There is no gene that would indicate that anything other than what your chromosomes have dictated, that you are going to be male or female. And Oklahoma Wesleyan stands for the dignity of the woman. So Title IX. Title IX is a law that I think is valid and good. Title IX is a law that I'm going to comply with. Title IX is a law that I think becomes meaningless if you dumb down the definition of a human being to nothing but the sum total of his or her inclinations. Your identity and my identity is greater than what you're inclined to do. Your proclivities do not dictate your personhood. You cannot trump your biology by those beliefs that you have that may be unscientific and may be subjective rather than objective facts. Your identity and my identity is the Imago Dei. We are made in the image of God, and that's a self-evident truth, biological, ontological, physiological, and it is a fact. And to dumb it down to nothing but the sum total of what you're inclined to do is an insult to a man, it's an insult to a woman, and it ultimately will result in the nonsense, the literal nonsense, because it makes no sense, of taking the dignity of the woman away by denying her very objective existence under the auspices of a law that's supposed to give her equal access to the sport, to the field, or to the locker room, or to the shower. We're going to take a break right now. If you want to call in, the number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Marquis Laughlin is founder of Acts of the Word Ministry and host of the radio and online show The Moral Dilemma. He challenges believers to develop a biblical worldview through dramatized illustrations and interpretive readings of the Bible.
They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Marquis Laughlin is sure to be an entertaining speaker this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in today for Tony Perkins, who's taking a break. I think he's fishing, mowing the lawn, or perhaps just enjoying his family today. The first segment, I spent the whole time almost, talking about Title IX and its intent to honor the dignity of a woman and give her equal access to the athletic field and to other programs on the campuses across our nation. I said that I believe in that and that I think in order to honor the dignity of a woman, I have to acknowledge that she is real. She's a scientific fact. And that to deny that objective reality, to deny the biology and the anatomy and the physiology of a female would be antithetical to Title IX. And ironically today, that's what the Department of Education is requiring of us, to deny that and provide transgender accommodations to those that are not biologically female but want to take away their privacy and their sports programs and spots in their on the team as well as on the field and perhaps even in the shower. A couple people are ready to call in and ask a few questions on that. Stacy in Texas is the first one. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Reverend Piper. Very good monologue. Really appreciate your intelligent response. We need more individuals to have that kind of response to these ridiculous laws, inquiries, and the more, you know, overreach the government has. My comment and question is, with that circulation on the internet, I assume is where the listing of the different educational institutions that are being noted that they're using their right to religious exemption.
Right.
Those institutions can connect with each other and unite and become a unified front to either provide a voice of reason with what will probably be more and more of these ridiculous misapplications of this law. Can that be done? Is there a forum for that already? That would be my question. I'll just let you answer.
All right. Thanks, Stacy. It is possible, and indeed there are several of us, Christian college presidents, that are getting together to discuss ways that we can unify for biblical fidelity and to honor our charters, honor our mission statements, which call upon us as Christian institutions to be Christian. Call me crazy, but if I tell you that I'm a Christian liberal arts college, I think I'm obligated to truth in advertising and to be orthodox, to be biblical, and to be Christian. And I don't think I should be penalized by the Department of Education or anybody else for doing that. That's what I'm called to do. And sidebar, I think that type of education is the best. It's grounded on a rock, a foundation, what we call at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, the four pillars: the primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture, the pursuit of truth, and the practice of wisdom. We teach that Jesus is the Son of God, the Bible is the Word of God, that truth is given by God, not made up by you or me, and that wisdom, holiness, sanctification, obedience, if you will, is not optional, that it's demanded by God. Now, those are good cornerstones. Those are the primary cornerstones, the seminal cornerstones of what a classical liberal arts education has been, always has been since its founding some 1,000 years ago. Now, the third cornerstone I mentioned to you, Stacy, and others listening right now, was the primacy of Christ, the priority of Scripture, and what? The pursuit of truth. Now, why do we say that? You pursue truth because it's an objective reality. It's out there, go get it. We don't construct truths, lowercase truths, and then celebrate getting a diploma in opinions. I don't pat you on the back and say you've got an opinion when you graduate. I actually expect you to learn something. I expect you to know the truths that are relative and relevant to your discipline. And if you majored in biology, then you ought to know the difference between a male and a female. You ought to know the biology therein. If you major in pre-med, you ought to know the difference between various different anatomical types. You ought to know physiology. You ought to know anatomy. You ought to know biology. You ought to know genetics. And if you don't understand the truths with a capital T in those disciplines, you got a lousy education and you should have gone someplace else. So that's my little soapbox on the importance of good education. So Stacy, what I really think people need to be doing, I think they need to be out there shopping for the very schools that are on this list. In a way, DOE, Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, thank you for putting this out there on your website. Now, parents and pastors and donors and people that care about a good, sound, quality liberal arts education that's grounded in the immutable, self-evident truths that are endowed to us by our Creator, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness versus haplessness. We don't have a hapless educational process here. We actually have a purpose, and that purpose is to go get something, and that is a measure of truth above and beyond what you had when you enrolled. And that's the measure of good education. I said it a couple weeks ago on this program, I believe. To this day, Oxford has one word on its seal, one word. Oxford is over 1,000 years old, and to this day it has one word on its seal. And do you know what it is? Veritas. Veritas is Latin for truth, because Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." Truth has to be the goal and the objective and the end outcome, the outcome, if you will, of the educational process. And without it, you're not truly a liberal arts institution, because you're not celebrating freedom any longer, liberty, liberation, classical liberalism, if you will. You're celebrating opinions, and opinions always digress to power. Power of those that are popular, power of the politically correct, power of the politician, power of the pulpit, and power of the podium over the objective truths of culture that are given to us and self-evident and immutable and unchangeable. When we dumb down the educational process to anything other than the celebration of the pursuit of truth, and we start rallying around these little opinions, we're going to have a terrible educational outcome, to the point where we as a culture actually sit around and act like it makes sense to deny the actual objective reality of a female under the auspices of a law that demands that I give the female equal access to the field and to the facilities. This makes no sense. It's time to take another break. I think we've got another caller afterwards. Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll be back right after this break.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Many people ask me about avoiding taxes on their IRAs. Some leave it in their estates and want to leave it to their children or leave it to other heirs, and they don't want to see all that tax get a hit on it. Well, it's virtually impossible to avoid with an IRA. You can't put IRA money into trust and other things that may shelter some of the tax. But here's a great idea that you ought to think about. I would hope that all of you are givers, that you give to some of the great ministries, to the work of God, to your church on a regular basis. And maybe you have all your life. I hope you have. And if you have, I would assume that you are making provisions in your will for that final last gift to God's work. Maybe you want to give 10% to four different ministries. You want to give some to obviously your church. You want to give maybe something to a ministry like this, Financial Issues or Family Research Council or American Family Association. And you want to do that as your last part of giving. Best way you could possibly do that is through your IRA. You could name those ministries for a percentage that would equal 10% of your overall estate, and you can name them as beneficiaries on your IRA. And all of that money will go without any taxes being paid on it. It is the best way to avoid taxes. I hope you'll think about that as you think about making that final gift. Do it through the beneficiary form of your IRA to some of those great ministries.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Everett Piper here again, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. We've been talking about Title IX. I've been explaining why I consider the new Dear Colleague letter from the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights to be problematic at best, if not blatantly duplicitous, because it essentially forces me to do the exact opposite of what Title IX was intended to do, and that is give women equal access to the programs that men enjoy at their colleges and universities across the land. I've explained my point. I've told you that I think a woman is a biological fact, and I think good education should admit that and teach that. I don't think it should refute that. And I think it's impossible for me to comply with Title IX if somebody in the government decides that somehow biology can be trumped by personal feeling. Your inclinations somehow become your identity rather than your biology and your self-evident nature as the imago Dei, the image of God. So we've got a few callers that have called in. I think we've got one on the line from Virginia right now. Terry, are you there?
Yes, hi. Thank you for your topic. I actually, this has become so, it's everywhere. I was in the gym today and somebody in the sauna brought this up as a discussion. And in the midst of it, he said, one of the people responding said, well, there was somebody in my life who was born a hermaphrodite and, you know, was externally a male but had female organs internally. And when he became an adolescent, he said, look, I just know I'm a woman mom and help me get there. So I was left flummoxed. All I could say was, well, it's a fallen world and we are, you know, having to deal with you know, bad genes and all that sort of thing. But I felt rather lame. But it sounds like, you know, how would you respond to that given the premise of what you're saying today?
Well, thanks, Terry. That's an excellent question. It does come up repeatedly. The first thing I would say is that is a biological reality. There is, we'll call it, it's certainly an anomaly. We can call it a biological error, if you will, where certain individuals, rare as it is, very, very small percentage of a percentage, are born with both male and female genitalia. And therefore, what do you do with that biological fact? Now, I've been sitting here haranguing and getting on my soapbox about being an educator and that educators should pursue facts and make decisions accordingly. So I think the answer in that case is God calls upon us to, first of all, look at the facts and then to be gracious in the face of those facts. And if there is somebody who does have this condition, this physiological, anatomical, biological condition, then we deal with it. We deal with that, but we don't create policies based on the anomaly. We do not create policies and therefore create normality out of the anomaly. You recognize that this is very rare. It's a percentage of a percentage, and that you deal with the situation in consultation with the doctor and with the parents and with the pastor and with the priest, and that the government should stay out of it, and that the Christian community should respond with compassion to those types of situations because of the biological facts therein. But we don't then turn around and use that exception, that anomaly, to then reconstruct, deconstruct first, and then reconstruct all of culture so that the norm becomes somehow distasteful in honor of the anomaly. Because then the world is upside down, and then we disparage what is normal. And people are going to criticize me. I guarantee you that somebody out there right now is listening and saying, I can't believe that he said that these people are abnormal. Again, I'm an educator. Let's deal with the words. What does the word mean? The norm, or is it somehow different from the norm? The norm is that 99% plus, 99.9% plus of the human population is either male or female. You have an anomaly periodically where you have an hermaphrodite. You deal with the abnormality with love and grace, and you deal with it as Christ would deal with it, and you deal with the decision as to how to resolve that particular physiological anomaly in consultation with the people that matter. The government stays out of it. The church deals with it. People address it, but you don't deconstruct and then reconstruct all of culture so that the norm becomes somehow distasteful and unacceptable in favor of the anomaly and the abnormality. I hope that makes sense, Terry. That would be my response, and I think it's defensible physiologically, and I think it's defensible theologically when it comes to a biblical worldview. Title IX, I've got a couple minutes, maybe 60 seconds before we get to another break. So I'm going to set you up for what's going to happen after the break. I want to talk about Title IX a little bit more, because even if you aren't in education and even if you don't have kids in the academy, if you're either too old and you don't have kids of college age any younger, you probably have nieces or nephews or grandkids that are going to be going to college soon. And even if you can't even identify anybody that you really care about that's going to be running off to college or university in the next 12 or 24 months, you should care about what we're talking about. Because what I said at the beginning of the program is so true. Garbage in, garbage out. What is taught today in the classroom will be practiced tomorrow in your courtroom and in your culture and even in your living room. When we continue to feed the next generation of leaders ideological carcinogens, why are we surprised when we sit around and find out that they have cancer of the mind and soul? The way to correct cancer is to stop consuming the stuff that causes it. And that's true for the mind and soul as well as it is for the body. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Again, the call-in number is 866-372-7234. We'll take a break now and come right back afterwards to discuss this further.
The hallowed grounds of the Arlington National Cemetery. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We will visit the Arlington National Cemetery. We'll see the burial site of John F. Kennedy, the Arlington House, which is the home of Robert E. Lee, and also the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. That's just one stop on one day. So much to see in our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we'll be going to Mount Vernon. Also, a tour of Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will precede our trip to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. For all the information on these tours, just go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. Or call for a free brochure, 800-FAMILIES, option 5.
The American Family Association exists to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of America. And we ask you to join a boycott of Target stores. If you agree that men don't belong in the same bathroom as our wives and daughters, visit AFA.net and sign our boycott pledge. Let Target know they're leading America down a dangerous path. AFA President Tim Wildman says this is exactly how sexual predators gain access to their victims. Again, the website is AFA.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Those pushing gender-neutral policies upon schools claim that not allowing transgender students to embrace their identity will lead to depression and suicide. As Christians, what should be our response? Indeed, we are to show compassion. However, compassion doesn't mean we celebrate a lifestyle that leads to despair. In fact, adult suicide rates are much higher among those who have fully embraced the transgender lifestyle. Just recently, the American College of Pediatricians strongly stated that gender confusion is a mental disorder and should be treated as such. For the vast majority, it's a phase they'll outgrow. As many as 98% of gender-confused boys and 88% of gender-confused girls eventually accept their biological sex after naturally passing through puberty. What those struggling with gender confusion need is not affirmation, but to be pointed to Christ, in whom they truly will find their identity. This is a Decency Minute.
This is Dr. Everett Piper again, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins, who's on vacation this afternoon. We've been talking a lot about Title IX. In fact, we've got off on this trail, and apparently it's of interest to some of you, so we'll just stay on it for a while. Again, to repeat, my position is that a woman is a woman, a biological fact, and she should be respected accordingly. If you deny that, you're the ultimate of being a misogynist. Because what is more insulting, what is more degrading to any human being than to deny their biological, scientific, ontological existence? Ontological is how do you understand what's real? It's the science of reality. It's the question of reality. So when somebody uses the word ontological or ontology, it's the question of reality. And again, isn't it real that you are a male or a female? Isn't that a fact? And if it isn't a fact, if ontologically it doesn't exist, then how in the world can you show the proper respect and give the dignity to the woman that the woman should have? I refuse at Oklahoma Wesleyan to insult women by suggesting that they don't exist and that they're nothing but the end result of some sort of postmodern deconstruction and then fabrication of anybody who decides that they are one, aside from the science and aside from the biology. All right, we've got Susan from Oklahoma. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And, Susan, where are you from?
Pardon?
Where are you from in Oklahoma? What city?
Tulsa, originally.
Okay. Well, I'm sitting in the studios at KFAQ in Tulsa right now, so again, it's good to talk to a fellow Oklahoman.
Well, it's nice talking to you, too. And actually, I remember seeing your university near a homeland. I think there was an extension from it in Tulsa.
Oh, great.
Near 32nd Street. But anyway, my comment is about a fact. And I have a niece who had a baby. And before the baby was born, they said the baby was a girl. And what is interesting is, they didn't do an amniocentesis. They didn't do an ultrasound. They took the mother's blood, scrambled it, and found out her genes and everything, which could be a good thing or not. But they said very certainly that the baby was a girl, and this was necessary to do because it was another C-section. And it was important for my niece for them to know if it was a boy or a girl because girls are more developed. Yay. And they can take girls a little quicker than boys. Hmm. And I don't know about the other gene you were discussing, But I just thought that was an interesting fact because they didn't say, well, it might be a girl, it might be a boy.
Good point, Susan. Again, science. I often chuckle because Christians and conservatives, whether you're both or just one or the other, Christians and conservatives often get criticized today by the mainstream media and by popular culture for being anti-science. We're often criticized. Well, you guys are superstitious. You have faith, but you don't believe in scientific facts. You guys are anti-science. You're always arguing for the unprovable God. You're arguing for the unprovable creation. When you won't accept the various different evidences that are out there for radical Darwinism and for climate change or whatever else the argument is, that somehow the conservative and somehow the Christian is anti-science. But here we step forward into this story that you just shared, Susan, where obviously there's a test. There's a test. Sometimes it's just a test of sight because you can see whether it's a boy or a girl, or at pre-birth you can actually tell through other tests whether it's a male or a female. It's a science. It's a fact. It is not just simply an opinion. And they make decisions accordingly. So if you can make a decision when the kid is still in the womb and before he or she is born as to whether or not it's a girl or a boy, shouldn't we be able to make the exact same types of empirical analysis and decisions after birth so that women have the rights that the law guarantees them? I want to emphasize this over and over again. If you all buy this argument that a woman is nothing but a fancy and a fabrication, nothing but an inclination of anyone, biologically female or not, who wants to be female, then you have just argued for the loss of all dignity, all definition, and all rights therein for every woman that you interact with, because they don't exist any longer. They disappeared to nothing but a postmodern deconstruction and fabrication of those who want to pretend. I think we've got another caller on the line. I think Rich from Louisiana. Rich, are you there?
Yes, sir. Hi, Dr. Piper. Good afternoon. And I wanted to call to encourage all of our listeners and thank the Lord that we've gotten over 1 million signatures now on the petition that's related to this issue there at Target. And I did want to mention to folks that some folks may be afraid to visit their local stores and talk to the manager or to call the call-in number there at Target, the customer service number. But I have found, I have called every day for the last week and a half whenever they made this announcement, and each and every time I've called the 800 number and talked to their customer service people, I have found them to be nothing but very, very polite, very accommodating to listen, sometimes for about 30 minutes at a time. And, of course, they're pretty much repeating the party line there that Target tells them to, but I have found it very useful to be able to just kindly express to them my concern and many, many other people's concerns for, if it's a woman, for even their personal safety and their children's. I try to address them on a very personal level and ask them how they would feel if their daughter were in a dressing room and there was a man that was allowed to go in the stall next to him. You know, just things like that, to try to make it personal, to try to get them to realize what a company that they're working for is really putting themselves and their children and 99.7% of the American people basically disregarded.
I think you've got a good point, Rick. I think you've got an excellent point. I think one of the things we need to remember, and this is very important, Rick's made a good point here. If we're going to engage in the cultural debate, and I don't think we have an option, I think we're expected. I'm a Colsonite. I'm a fan of Chuck Colson. He told us that it was our obligation as the body of Christ to engage in the public square. William Wilberforce was his hero for stepping into the public square in Great Britain and arguing for the abolition of the British slave trade. And after over 20-some years arguing on the floor of the British Parliament, he finally prevailed. So it was the Christian voice that led to the abolition of slavery. It's the Christian voice that has led to the establishment of hospitals. It was the Christian voice that led to the elevation of the dignity of the woman from times of the Roman Empire to the times of its fall, and then through the medieval era and up till today, the woman was elevated to a much higher status, above the status of chattel, if you will, to the status of a human being having equal rights because of the equal dignity in the Imago Dei. So Rick's point is this. When you're arguing in the public square, do it with grace, do it with confidence, do it with courage, and don't go in fallaciously using ad hominem attacks, in otherwise calling people names, and non sequiturs, where you're basically arguing things that don't matter and don't make any sense. You go in and you deal with reality and you ask rhetorical questions. You ask a question like Rick just said. Do you want the woman to have the dignity of her own toilet? Do you stand for the rights of women to have the privacy of their own restroom? Do you believe that Title IX is a good law because it says that the female should have access to her own athletic team, her own scholarships, her own facilities? And if they answer yes to all the above, and they should, because if they deny or answer in the negative, then they're really in trouble. So ask the logical rhetorical question, just like Jesus did, and then just be quiet and let the worldview of those that don't stand on the foundation of biblical truth implode before your very eyes, because they'll probably drop their stones and walk away. That's why Jesus said, which one of you wants to throw the first stone? He didn't argue with them. He didn't debate them per se. He just said, which one of you wants to drop the first stone? Now, he's the smartest man that ever walked the face of the earth. He's God incarnate, my land. He obviously knew how to win the debate, but he chose not to argue. He chose instead to, more often than not, be gracious and ask a simple question and let the worldview of his opponent implode, because it was a broken worldview that was built on sand. I think we've got one more caller. TJ, are you still there? TJ from Illinois.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead, TJ.
Yes. Yeah, good show, Dr. Piper. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You?
Yeah, okay. I got a lot to say. We are short on time. I'll kind of go fast, and then I'll end with a question, if I might, please. First of all, this is nothing new. This goes back biblically way back. Khmerism, homosexuality and the hermaphrodite, it goes way back. So we got perplexing issues. This is just one of those perplexing issues. Now, Title IX, let me ask you a question, sir. Does that also include the privacy of male bathrooms? I mean, it seems like you've got male transgenders wanting to use little girl bathrooms. What about female transgenders coming in male? So does Title IX cover that as well?
Title IX was developed primarily to give women equal access, because at the time of its establishment, TJ and everybody else here, 1972, up until that point, athletics on most colleges and university campuses was predominantly a male enterprise. So you had men who were enjoying the privilege of intercollegiate athletics, intercollegiate facilities, and the scholarships that come with them, whereas women were disadvantaged and didn't get their fair shake. And that was arguably true. So therefore, the government got together and they decided that they would establish a law so that women could have a volleyball program, and women could have a soccer program, and women could have a softball program and a basketball program. And that if indeed they do have that program, they shouldn't get some lousy facility that's subpar to what the men get. They should have the same gymnasium, the same court, and they should have comparable scholarships too. Now, that was the purpose of Title IX, was to give these women that access. And TJ, so yeah, if everybody starts redefining what a male or a female is, then how in the world are you going to make any decisions, distinctions, differentiations? How are you going to discriminate? How are you going to have discriminating tastes, if you will, and a discriminating judgment at the end of the day as to give people fair and equitable treatment? Because if there is no ability for us to differentiate between male and female, equitable treatment is meaningless, because you don't know who's what and who's not, because you can't give them a fair shake if they don't even objectively exist. I want to say something else. I need to conclude here in about 5 minutes. So I'm going to get you guys to recognize there's one other aspect of Title IX that's critical. In fact, there are two. You know, we've talked about this transgender accommodation issue. There's a second issue here. The object of the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights is also as follows. They are telling us that we have to ignore the legal rights of our students to due process. In other words, if a student is accused of sexual harassment, if a student is accused of an illegal act, the DOE says we can no longer tell the student that they can avail themselves of the full protection of the law. If they're accused, or even if they're claiming to be the victim, the full extent and availability of due process in the local police office and all the legal protections therein have to be sidestepped in favor of what the DOE is now requiring us to do on our campuses, and that is to set up a judicial process separate from the legal system, separate from the police department, and to have a kangaroo court to adjudicate the claim that's been brought before the campus. Now stop and think about that. If you're accused of something, you cannot avail yourself of due process. You cannot go to the police station. You cannot ask for that to be the process that's followed to investigate this claim of a crime. That is rather sobering. At Oklahoma Wesleyan, if there's a claim of anything that's illegal, if somebody claims I have been a victim of an illegal act, we turn it over to the police department. And why shouldn't we? Why should we be told, no, that's not good enough, you can't do that? What you have to do now is have an internal process, and you guys are the ones that'll make the decision, not the police, not a detective, not a jury, not a judge, and there's no due process involved. There's another thing that Title IX does. There's another thing. It presumes that threatening speech is also akin and equivalent to any sexual harassment and any sexual misconduct. So anytime somebody feels that my speech or yours is threatening and they don't like it, for example, maybe they've listened to this conversation where we've debated the transgender argument and the biological and the factual reality of the female versus the fabrication of postmodernity, and they don't like that. Maybe they don't like my language or yours. They can label it as threatening. It is therefore verboten. It is forbidden on that campus, and the student is expelled immediately. And the DOE is now demanding that and demanding that colleges and universities comply. In other words, it's the antithesis of freedom of inquiry, of academic freedom, of freedom of expression, because anytime there's something that's threatening, speech that's threatening, it can be that claim against you or against the university can be used to silence the voice, silence the university, and to penalize anybody who stepped into the mix and had a contrary idea. You can obviously tell I'm a bit incredulous about this. Oklahoma Wesleyan will not remain silent on this stuff. We will defend the right of our students who are accused of committing a crime, as well as all who claim that they are victims of a crime, to avail themselves of the protections of the law. And we will fight the DOE's presumption of compromising the privacy of co-ed's locker room, bathroom, or shower. We will not accept the arrogance of any state official trying to police the ideas of our faculty and our students who express a contrary idea, whether it be on the campus or in a classroom. This is government overreach at its worst. These are unconstitutional overreaches. They're anti-woman and they're anti-liberal. Bonhoeffer said, not to speak is to speak. Silence in the face of evil is evil itself. This has been Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins for Washington Watch. Thanks for joining me today, and I'm sure Tony will be back first thing Monday. Blessings and have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.